Welcome to Haldane's Law Matters. Thank you. And today we're really delighted to welcome Tim Owen, KC, and a specialist from your own podcast.
Yes, that's true, Jonathan. I have co-hosted a podcast for the last year. It's called Double Jeopardy, the Law and Politics Podcast, with my good friend and colleague, the former Director of Public Prosecutions, Ken MacDonald, Lord MacDonald. So we're rivals in the podcasting world.
In a crowded area nowadays.
Yes, yes. Well, actually, we were quite surprised when the idea sort of first came to us. We thought, oh, well, there'll be loads of other rival podcasts that deal with law and politics. Actually, there are not that many that we've come across. There are loads of American ones, but not that many that deal with certainly English law and politics, that sort of intersection.
What do you normally aim for in Double Jeopardy?
Well, we've had a huge range of guests. We've had Baroness Hale, the former President of the Supreme Court, Dominic Grieve, the former Attorney General, David Panic, Edward Fitzgerald, Claire Montgomery, Professor Kathleen Stock, to talk about the whole transgender gender-critical debate. She was the Professor of Philosophy at Sussex. And in fact, her podcast is still our highest-rated episode, which goes to show how that issue of the trans debate and the huge political divide between gender-critical feminists and trans activists has sort of emerged as a huge issue.
Yeah. And in fact, we've just had a Court of Final Appeal case here that Jimmy Sham was adjudicated very recently.
Yeah, I mean, that isn't to do with trans rights.
No, it's gay rights.
It's to do with whether Hong Kong's legal system afforded recognition compatibly with the ICCPR and the Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
In terms of affording some form of legal protection or framework for same-sex partnerships or relationships. They rejected but unanimously the idea that marriage could include a same-sex couple, but they found by a majority 3-2 that Hong Kong was in breach of the Bill of Rights in failing to provide for any form of partnership or legal recognition of a same-sex relationship.
So it doesn't matter where you are in the world, these are hot topics.
They certainly are, yes.
It's just the way of it. Now, I was going to, speaking of hot topics, I wanted to just address...
Oh, yes.
The elephant. the elephant in the room. Before we go on, because I know that you've got many things that you're famous for, but one that makes you newsworthy at the moment, of course, was your association with the prosecution of Mr. Jimmy Lai, and we're going to keep that off the table today, I think.
I'm afraid, yes, we do. I mean, obviously, it's been in the public domain here in Hong Kong that I was admitted last year, towards the end of last year, to defend Mr. Lai in his pending forthcoming trial on national security law offences, and then after the courts locally admitted me. The case was then referred to the National People's Congress Standing Committee in Beijing, and then there was an interpretation and then steps taken. And anyway, the position is, at the moment, I'm refused a work permit to do that case, and there is litigation pending, and for that reason I can't really talk about it.
We'll leave it alone.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, of course, you've been to Hong Kong many times over the years.
I have a lot. My first case was in 2007, doing, funnily enough, a case about double jeopardy, a case called Yung Sheng Pong in the Court of Final Appeal against my good friend Kevin Zervos, who was the deputy DPP then.
Yes.
Anyway, I came second in that case.
Yes. Well, he was a good advocate, as
Kevin
was a crossed swords many times over the years.
Yeah, he's a great advocate. Anyway, so that was my first case back in 2007, and then there was a bit of a gap of a few years, and then I came to do another case in 2011, I think.
Yeah.
And then I've come here pretty much every year since then.
Have you enjoyed it?
I love Hong Kong. absolutely love coming here. I love every aspect of life here. I mean, the work has always been really interesting, and I've built up a completely new circle of friends, mainly
and
lawyer
a wife,
friends.
A wife.
And in then I met my wife, Wei, who is a journalist based in Hong Kong, and we met when I was involved in the Rurik Jutting murder trial, and she was reporting on it, and I was defending Mr. Jutting in that trial.
I remember the trial.
Yeah.
And so you're more or less a Hong Kong fellow now, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I'm a regular.
You're
definitely a regular, yeah.
All right. So disposing of the Jimmy Lai matter for the reasons you've explained, it's probably worth mentioning that you're involved in a case in which my firm's involved in with you.
Yes. Again, I...
You better not say much.
I can't say too much about it.
It's on the roll.
Because it's before the courts, yeah, at the moment. Yes, but yeah, the answer is yeah. I mean, I'm defending in a case, a fraud trial in the High Court, alongside Ian Winter, who your firm is instructing.
And who was formerly on Haldane's Law Matters.
Who was on your podcast a few weeks ago.
Talking not so much about law, but
no, Ian's got a huge range of other interests beyond the law, and he's a brilliant musician.
He's a jolly
so he doesn't have to talk about the law.
No, well, we thought it better not in the round. Anyway, so actually, speaking of guests on podcasts, one of the reasons I personally became interested in this was because I'm a huge fan of Alistair Campbell and Rory Stewart, and the rest is
I listen to it a lot. I'm a huge fan, an admirer of what they do, because you know, doing podcasts myself, you realize, and listening to lots and lots of podcasts, particularly things to do with politics and to some extent the law, you realize how hard it is to sustain the kind of novelty of the issues and topics. And those two have just got a fantastic relationship. They obviously, politically, they come from different backgrounds. Alistair Campbell obviously was chief of communications in the Tony Blair government, but had an incredible range of experience during that time. And Rory Stewart was a old Etonian conservative MP, but with another interesting international background.
Not a typical Tory at all.
Well, you could, I suppose, he is a typical old Tory from another era.
He is
not, obviously, because he was kicked out of the party by Boris Johnson over Brexit. But he's a liberal Tory. Anyway, the point is the two of them have got a fantastic relationship.
And it's a wonderful podcast.
It is. I think it's a wonderful podcast, as the figures show. I mean, they have incredible audience figures, and they're making a lot of money off it.
Rory Stewart, actually, you may know this, had connections with Hong Kong.
Yeah, yeah. His father was based here.
Yeah.
I think he's supposed to be a spook.
Possibly.
A British spy.
Yes.
Working for MI6. Yeah. And but he grew up in Hong Kong.
I was admiring him when he was running for leadership. He was far too good to be the leader of the Conservative Party, of course.
Well, yes, he very funnily, his book has just been published, actually, and he does describe, and he talks about it in the podcast, about how he finds it almost impossible to accept why he lost to someone who he describes as so disgusting and dishonest and disreputable as Boris Johnson. It's just something in him, he just can't understand how he could have lost to such a person.
And I suspect you wouldn't be arguing the case against that point.
No. I mean, we're then going to get into why people like Donald Trump and why they like other populist leaders.
Well, perhaps we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
But I might say I wrote to Rory Stewart saying that I much regretted that he wasn't going to be the leader of the Conservative Party. And to his credit, I thought, he wrote a personal
letter.
Oh, he wrote back to me immediately and said, don't worry, we'll have another go another day.
Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me that he wrote back. I mean, I don't know the guy at all, but I'm just from judging from his general sort of persona on the podcast. That's good. Anyway, we're giving far too much publicity to the rest
rival,
is politics.
Right,
a rival
right,
podcast.
We aspire.
We can't claim to be a rival, I'm afraid.
No, we can't. Yeah. We can't. So, but we touched on, Boris Johnson. and mentioned Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Why do we have a political system that in the West is throwing up such, should we just be neutral, extraordinary politicians who end up in enormous positions, you know, positions of enormous power?
Well, I know. Well, obviously, I mean, that would be a sort of 15-part podcast episode to discuss, wouldn't it? I mean, the answer, I suppose, can only be in democratic countries that previous forms of leadership have alienated enough people so they are so disgusted and turned off the politicians of old, the Tony Blairs, you know, the Barack Obama, or in Europe, in Poland, in Hungary, and so on, that older form of government has generated a massive reaction, so yes, that people of such low grade, such low morals, such low standards of behaviour in public life, like Johnson and Trump, can actually get a majority through a democratic election.
Yes.
So one has to see it as a failure of the democratic system, or the failure of democratic politics, to continue to command what we might regard as an acceptable form of political life.
So there are two questions that occur to me when I hear you say that. The first is a micro approach.
Mm.
Keir Starmer, I think you personally know.
I know Keir, yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Is he the answer?
Well, Keir... Keir is almost certainly, on the basis of current polling, going to be the next Prime Minister of the United Kingdom.
Yes.
And if you're asking me whether I think he is an improvement on what we've experienced in the UK since 2010, I would say undoubtedly yes. He's a totally decent man. He is completely committed to public service. He's not in it for fame, glory, or money. He may not be the most magnetically charismatic individual on the planet, but he is definitely, in my view, what Britain needs after, frankly, farcical period of government. I was actually preparing with Ken McDonald, my co-host. We were due yesterday to record an episode of Double Jeopardy with Alex Chalk, who's the Lord Chancellor of Britain. And in the end, we couldn't record it because he was called to Parliament, I think because there was an escape of a prisoner, a high-risk prisoner from Wandsworth Prison yesterday. So we got a message at the last minute saying he couldn't record as planned. Anyway, but in preparing to interview him yesterday, I looked at the record of Lord Chancellors. And between 1964, when Lord Gardiner was the Lord Chancellor, to 2010, when Jack Straw was the Lord Chancellor, there were 8 Lord Chancellors, and the average period in office they each had was 5.7 years. And that included Lord Mackay, who did 10 years under Margaret Thatcher. Mm. Since 2010, so in 13 years, there have been 10 Lord Chancellors, and the average period in office is 1 year and 4 months. So you're looking at a governmental system since 2010 that isn't serious. You're dealing with the Ministry of Justice, the Lord Chancellor's Department, and you have had 10, Alex Chalk is the 11th Lord Chancellor in just over 13 years.
So indicative of what we've been talking about, a conservative government that has, well done.
Well, it's a joke.
A lot of harm.
It's a lot of harm.
The United Kingdom.
And if you believe in the rule of law and in a strong minister in the cabinet, the Lord Chancellor, who stands up for the rule of law, the independence of the judiciary, and is focusing on the constitutional plumbing, which is crucial to a thriving democracy, that's the contrast.
Yeah.
You know, between 1964 and 2010, 9 Lord Chancellors, 5.5 years in office on average. Since then, the same number or more Lord Chancellors, average of 1.5 years in office. You can't be serious. You cannot be serious as a political manager of a huge government department if you're only in office for barely a year.
You've barely got the hang of it.
And in the last year in Britain, there have been five education secretaries since July last year. Yeah. Five education secretaries. Well, that is a complete joke.
I've said publicly, for what it's worth, it doesn't matter really what I say publicly, but I have said that in my 70-odd years on this earth, this is the worst government in my lifetime.
Yes.
It's been appalling. I mean, we won't even utter the word Brexit, otherwise our hearts will start to pound and we won't be able to continue.
We'll sound like a couple of grumpy old guaylos.
We'll sound like Alistair and Rory.
I think so.
Yeah. Can't stand the idea of separating ourselves from
I can't
the
remember how either. We how do we get onto this subject?
I've no idea, Tim.
I can't remember now. I think it was a segue from the rest is politics.
Yeah. And the mention of Boris Johnson.
That's right. I triggered you or you triggered me.
Yeah, there was a trigger and it's an interesting topic because it's not just England. And it's not just America, it's the whole of the democratic world that seems to be in trouble.
I think that is right.
Well, I suppose the next question, and I mentioned, was Starmer, the answer.
Oh, that's right, yes,
And I said it was a two-part question.
Yeah.
And the other is Macro.
Macron.
Macro.
Oh, sorry, I thought you'd have been Macron.
How do we rationalise... For example, the systems in China and Russia and places which do not have democracy in the sense that we mean it. I know Chinese, mainland Chinese, who would say, of course we have democracy. It's just a different type.
Of course.
Where does that leave us?
I would make a distinction between Russia and China.
Yes, I mean,
Russia is basically a gangster state. Yes. It's a criminal organization that sees state power.
So you're not planning to travel to Moscow this year?
Not this year, no. I have in the past acted for Russian clients,
yes.
I'm not saying in my decisions about the cases I choose that I only pick certain causes. But if one's looking globally, I mean, Russia is a gangster state.
Right.
China obviously is very different. It's obviously not a democracy in a West. It's not a Western democracy. But the reason why China is perhaps exerting so much influence successfully around the world, and particularly in Africa, for example, is that the Western model of government doesn't look like it's delivering great results. So, you know, in those circumstances, China might well be seen as an attractive model, apart from all of the economic assistance and so on that China is able to provide.
And the economic assistance and the move to clearly make what's known as BRICS an important part of the world...
Well, an alternative model.
Alternative model.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we're going to see that becoming increasingly...
we're getting into some heavy things here, Mitch.
Oh, I mean, you know, you've no idea, Tim. When you submit yourself to Haldane's Law Matters...
You just told me I was coming along to have a sort of casual chat about why I'm in Hong Kong. Solving world political solutions.
Well, for anyone that's listening to us out there when this is published, Tim and I have just had a very good lunch.
Yes.
And we we came back down thinking, well, what should we talk about? We agreed that life is much better when it evolves organically. It just flows.
Exactly. You did say you wanted to ask me about the Spanish kiss.
Let's do... Well, why don't we talk about the Spanish kiss? Because it's really a headline that won't go away.
Yeah. Well, and when you told me that earlier on this afternoon before lunch, I did say to you, I don't think I got anything useful to say on that.
Having said that.
Well, the thing is, and obviously just... For listeners, if there are any listeners out there who are not aware what we're talking about, we're talking about is the fallout from the victorious Spanish women's football team who won the World Cup.
Who were tremendous,
completely outplayed England. I watched the whole match and England were just clearly not in the same league as the Spanish women. So they won in glorious circumstances. And then... although I didn't see any of this, I don't know if you've seen it either. The head of the Spanish Football Association, a man called Luis Rubiales, is alleged to have forcibly kissed one of the players, Jenny Hermoso, And then there was a debate about, was it consensual, was it an assault? And it's led to a huge spiraling debate in Spain about the behavior of this man Rubiales and all the men and whoever supported him. He refused to resign. The prime minister said he must resign. The whole Spanish society is up in arms. And as of today, the coach of the victorious women's team, I think it's Vidala. Anyway, he's been sacked. And so that's the context. And now, having described it in that way, your question to me was, what do I think about it? I suppose.
I mean, what did you make of it? Because it does, like everything else in the world nowadays, Tim, you'll probably agree, it splits opinion. I mean, not everyone thinks it's egregious, and others think it's totally egregious.
Well, I mean, it's very difficult, isn't it? We're both lawyers. We normally only act on evidence. And
we don't have it.
We don't really have it. All you have is what you read in the newspapers. It seems to me, for what it is worth, which is probably not very much, that it's clearly, this is all about something much more than that one incident.
Yeah.
It's about a sort of feeling about behaviour, attitudes within Spain, because there were huge problems before this incident.
Yeah,
15 women players, 15 of the top women footballers refused to be in the team because they didn't like the coach, who was supported by this man Rubiales. So there's a huge question, it would seem, from what I've read, about sexism and machismo culture within Spain, which is lies behind this.
Yes.
And I think it's quite hard for you and I here in Hong Kong to say more than that, isn't it?
Now, I wasn't thinking to pass judgment, because I don't think it is possible, and it's legitimate to have different views upon it, seems to me.
Yeah.
I don't think it is a one-way street, but I agree entirely. It's sort of lifted the lid off of something that's been simmering in Spain quite clearly.
Well, it must be, because this would not, on the face of it, if it was literally about a man in a sudden rush of emotion embracing a person and giving them a peck on the lips, you might think, well, they can't just produce such a reaction.
It's obviously
something much more fundamental that lies behind it.
I saw a short video clip, and it looked, I mean, it was a very brief, you know.
I haven't seen it.
So, and there were other pictures of the lady involved being given a sort of fireman's lift and waving madly at the crowd. Fireman's lift by
this guy, Rubiales.
By this fellow, you see. So, who knows? But I think, anyway, it's certainly caused interest around the world, so I thought it was something post-lunch.
And you're about to return to Spain.
Right, I return to Spain tomorrow, so I don't know. I shan't be pecking anyone on any lips. I'm going to play very safe.
I think that's wise.
But I'm looking forward to the sunshine. And Tim, thank you so much for coming.
Great pleasure, mate.
Down
thank
to Haldane's to have a chat with us. We'll look forward to another occasion. And good luck with your current case.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be with you again. Bye-bye.
Thank you.